Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on billions for the bankers, debts for the people, right after this. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, you shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have. Well, you know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Well, now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach in our business school, conducted twice a year here at the law school. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Our business school is also available on compact disc for Belt Home Study. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Hey, last time we were talking about this thing of billions for the bankers, and I gave you some famous quotations from a number of world leaders, business leaders, and political leaders here in the United States. Well, our Congress back in 1986 enacted the Coinage Act of 1964. Now, the history of gold and silver coin goes back to our founding fathers. Let me give you a little rundown on gold and silver here in the United States. Under the British Empire, when we established the colonies here in the United States, the British Empire was on a gold and silver standard, and we had gold and silver money. Well, the colonies, about 1694 through about 1756, started issuing paper money. And they drove the economy right into the ground, just like we are today. We had recession, depression, we had hyperinflation. And in 1756, they repented, and then they went right back to doing more of it, so that by the end of the Revolutionary War in 1783, the continental currency collapsed into hyperinflation again. And then we went through the Articles of Confederation, and George Mason was the champion of the Article 1, Section 10 provision, which calls for no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. So we went back to that biblical principle of just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36, and Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16. And from 1787 until 1933, we had gold and silver coin. And we became the wealthiest, most prosperous, and powerful nation in the world. Now, Franklin Roosevelt comes in during the Depression. This depression was the outgrowth of the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, and in 20 years' time, they bankrupted us. And so Franklin Roosevelt called in the gold, and it was called House Joint Resolution 192. And they put the gold in Fort Knox and gave us pieces of paper and said, someday we'll give you back your gold, and they never have. Well, they didn't give us back the gold for the pieces of paper at face value. We can get it, but it costs us an arm and a leg now. So some time went on, and in 1964, the price of silver got out of hand because of the inflation, and President Johnson took us off silver. So he gave us clad coins, and that's what you've got in your pocket today. We call them sandwich coins or clad coins. And within about 3 or 4 years, all the silver coins that had been in circulation soon disappeared. That's the old adage that says bad money drives out good. Time went on. In 1976, they legalized the owning of gold for Americans, and then in 1986, Congress enacted a tax reform bill, and this guy Ron Paul was pretty instrumental in getting in an amendment that provided for a mint at West Point, New York, and gold and silver coin again. So from 1933 to 1986, we didn't have gold. And from 1965 until about 1986, we didn't have silver coin, but now we've got both. We got them both. And it's codified at Title 31, Section 5101. Title 31, Section 5101. And then it continues on through about Section 5112. And then it tells us about our gold and silver coin. So the gold and silver money system is incorporated into our federal law at Title 31, Section 5101 through Section 5112. And in 5101, the decimal system, it's explained here. It says United States money is expressed in dollars, dimes, or tenths, cents, or hundredths, and mills, or thousands. And a dime is a tenth of a dollar, a cent is a hundredth of a dollar, and a mill is a thousandth of a dollar. Then in Section 5102, the standard troy pound of the National Bureau of Standards of the Department of Commerce shall be the standard used to ensure that the weight of United States coins conforms to specifications in Section 5112 of this title. And then in 5103, the legal tender clause says United States coins and currency, including Federal Reserve notes and circulating notes of Federal Reserve banks and national banks, are legal tender for all debts, public charges, taxes, and dues. Foreign gold or silver coins are not legal tender for debts. So we have a dual monetary system, and we have had right from day one. Going back to 1796, Congress authorized a national bank. And they chartered it and incorporated it, and this national bank went out and made paper money. They did that for about 20 years until 1816. And then they renewed the charter, and they did it for another 20 years until 1836. But President Andrew Jackson vetoed that U.S. National Bank bill. I showed you that in the last program. Then from 1836 until about 1862, the bankers were out of power. But President Lincoln comes into the picture, and he needs to finance the Civil War. And the bankers want to get in on the act, and he bypassed the bankers. And then he printed United States notes, called greenbacks, and which was a constitutional move to make, but it made the bankers upset, so they murdered him. They killed him. Now, with Lincoln out of the way, as time progressed, the bankers, remember, with their own state banks. Now, you could always incorporate and charter a state bank, but they didn't have their national bank back until 1913. And this is the Jekyll Island angle to the Federal Reserve Act, and then President Wilson signed that Federal Reserve Act. And listen to this. A guy by the name of Salmon P. Chase, he was the Secretary of the Treasury under Abraham Lincoln. And then later he became Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And he had a little something to say about this thing of the National Bank Act of 1862. He said, quote, this is Salmon P. Chase. Now remember, this guy became Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. But at the time in 1862, when he said this, he was the Secretary of Treasury of the United States. He said, my agency in promoting the passage of the National Bank Act was the greatest financial mistake of my life. It has built up a monopoly which affects every interest in the country, and it should be repealed. But before that can be accomplished, the people will be arrayed on one side and the banks on the other in a contest such as we have never before seen in this country. Now, this contest is building up right now. And here's what's coming down. The people of America are being shafted by the bankers. And I think that people around the country, you know, not everybody, but, you know, a great bunch of people can see that this bank bailout over here didn't have anything to do with saving people's houses in Las Vegas, Nevada. It probably wasn't even on the radar screen. Now, Salmon P. Chase, I think, hit the nail on the head. There's going to be a contest, but I don't know that the bankers are going to lose the contest. Because remember, the bankers control the Congress. And the Congress is controlled by money. And the people vote for these politicians based upon the 30-second sound bites that they see on television. The people themselves aren't out researching and studying and trying to learn or educate or teach themselves. They're depending upon the politicians who are telling them in 30-second sound bites that they're for America and that they're for peace and that they're for hard money and sound money and that they're on their side one thing and another. Then when they get to Washington, they vote entirely differently. Just like I mentioned in the last program, there's a little town in California called Bell. The people of the city are awake now to the fact that their mayor has drawn a salary of $800,000 a year. But for years, they didn't pay any attention to that. Now, you're alerted to the fact today that there's been a big bank bailout, but I think what you're going to do is to vote in Team A in place of Team B, the Democrats. You're going to vote in Team A, the Republicans. They're all in on the scam together. So it isn't going to change anything. That's what happened when you voted for Bush, and then you voted for Barack Obama because you want change. But you see, you keep changing back from Team A to Team B, Team B to Team A, Team A to Team B, but it's all one and the same. You got the Republicrats or the Demopublicans, whichever you want to call them. So as a result of that, I'm not sure that Salmon P. Chase and his prediction that you're going to find that the two sides are arrayed against one another, that it's going to bring any meaningful change. We all hope it does, but I'm not waiting for that to happen. I want you to notice in 5103 that the gold coins and silver coins that we have today, we have a $5 gold coin, $10 gold coin, $25, and a $50 gold coin, and a $1 gold coin, a $1 silver coin. The silver dollar is being minted. The silver dollar is a full ounce, and so are all of our other coins. They're 100%, which they've really made an improvement. They haven't clipped the coins. So the $50 gold eagle today has a full ounce of gold in it, 480 grams. And the silver dollar, instead of the old silver dollars, which had 371 grains of silver in them, now they've got a full 480 grains, one full ounce, which is what they should have. Now, as a result of that, we now have our gold and silver coin back, and we have always had a dual monetary system in this country. That is paper money issued by banks, private banks, and then we've had our gold and silver coin, which is issued by our government. And I suspect that God himself has intervened to make sure that we've got our gold and silver coin so that we don't have any excuse when we come up in the judgment and God asks, you know, well, now, did you practice a gold and silver coin, just weights and balances, or did you use unjust weights and balances? And now you won't have any excuse because they're available. It is true from 33 to 86 you didn't have them available. Well, not readily available. You had junk silver coin. You always had your silver coin. And you could use a gold coin, but you had to use it under the table. Now let's get over here to 5112 and let me give you a few more little pieces of the puzzle here. In 5112, denominations, specifications, and the design of the coins. The Secretary of the Treasury may mint and issue only the following coins. A dollar coin that is 1.043 inches in diameter and weighs 8.1 grams. A half dollar coin that is 1.205 inches in diameter and weighs 11.34 grams. A quarter dollar coin that is 0.955 inch in diameter and weighs 5.67 grams. And a dime coin that is 0.705 inch in diameter and weighs 2.268 grams. A 5 cent coin that is 0.835 inches in diameter and weighs 5 grams. And except as provided under subsection C of this subsection, a 1 cent coin that is 0.075 inches in diameter and weighs 3.11 grams. Now the dollar, half dollar, quarter dollar, and dime coins are clad coins with three layers of metal. The two identical outer layers are an alloy of 75% copper and 25% nickel, and the inner layer is copper. The outer layers are metallurgically bonded to the inner layer and weigh at least 30% of the weight of the coin. The 5 cent coin is an alloy of 75% copper and 25% nickel. In minting 5 cent coins, the secretary shall use bars that vary not more than 2.5% from the percent of nickel required. Except as provided under subsection C of this section, the 1 cent coin is an alloy of 95% copper and 5% zinc. The specifications for alloys are by weight. Now, the secretary may prescribe the weight and the composition of copper and zinc coins in the alloy of the 1 cent coin. And it goes on to talk about Susan B. Anthony's and so on. And this is the clad coinage that President Johnson gave us back in 1965. And the bottom line to that clad coinage is that it's a counterfeit. It's not real money. It's not the stuff of which real money is made. Real money now is gold and silver coin, which is also provided for here in section 5112, called the denomination, specifications, and the design of the coins, which talks about gold now. So our clad Susan B. Anthony's and our clad Kennedy half dollars, and our clad Washington quarters, and our clad dimes with Roosevelt's picture, and our clad nickels, and our clad pennies. All of that money that we're minting today is fake. It's phony. It's counterfeit. Those are tokens, and we accept them, and we conduct our trade, commerce, business, and industry with them. But at the same time, they came back, and they gave us our gold and silver coins back in this form. And this is 5112, denomination, specifications, and designs of coins. Now, the Secretary of the Treasury may mint and issue only the following coins. It's a $50 gold coin that is 32.7 millimeters in diameter and weighs 33.931 grams and contains 1 troy ounce of fine gold. So an ounce now is, a troy ounce would be 28.388888 grams. But this coin is 33.931 grams and it's 22 carat. It has 1 full ounce, 480 grains of gold in it, but it also has some copper in the coin. So it's a 1 ounce eagle, and this 1 ounce eagle has a face value of $50. And remember 5103, it's a legal tender coin. Legal tender. A $50 gold coin has no greater or lesser value than a $50 bill with President Grant's picture on it. Isn't that special? Now the gold content of the coin is 1,300 Federal Reserve Note dollars. But its official weight and measure, given by Congress, who has the job now, the duty, under the Constitution, to coin our money and to declare the value of it. And they've done that. And this is very, very valuable to those of us that want to obey God, keep His commandments, and practice the law of Moses. Because we now have our gold and silver coin back. And we can buy, we can sell, we can trade with that gold and silver coin. And that's important. That takes us off and takes us out of the income tax and Social Security, if you so desire. I mean, you know, it's a choice that you have to make. And most people want to participate in Social Security and income tax, and I wouldn't deny it. To illustrate my point, in 1992 and in 1996, I believe, or 96 and 2000, a guy by the name of Steve Forbes, you remember him? I think it was 96 and 2000. Steve Forbes, he has a magazine called Forbes Magazine, a conservative guy. He proposed that we abolish the income tax and come up with a flat tax. And the people of America, they voted in Bob Dole and Bill Clinton. And they wouldn't vote for this guy Forbes. So the signal that I picked up from that is that the people of America want the income tax, because both Clinton and Dole were in favor of income tax. So far be it from me, you know, to butt in and interfere with the people of America and their desire to have income tax. It's just that I don't want to participate in the income tax. But I'm not opposed to 300 million Americans doing that if they so desire. Now, you might look at that and say, well, I don't think I want to participate in it either. Well, pay attention and listen on, because there isn't any reason for us to participate in income tax. We should be participating in tithing. You owe your tithe to God. But you don't owe a tithe to God and an income tax to the United States. No man can serve two masters. Matthew 6:24, the Messiah told you, you know, two masters is more than you can probably handle. And in Deuteronomy 30, God said, I want you to choose now whether you're going to follow me or Baal. Most people prefer Baal, and I don't deny that. But again, that's a choice that we all have to make. And if what you see around you today, you say to yourself, well, maybe following Baal wasn't such a good idea, you might want to switch horses here. All right, so we got this $50 gold piece. Now, we've got a $25 gold piece that's 27 millimeters in diameter and weighs 16.966 grams and contains 1/2 troy ounce of fine gold. Then we have a $10 gold coin that is 22 millimeters in diameter. It weighs 8.483 grams and contains 1/4 troy ounce of fine gold. And then we have a $5 gold coin that is 16.5 millimeters in diameter, weighs 3.393 grams and contains 1/10 troy ounce of fine gold. So we have four gold coins back. We got the $5, $10, $25, and $50 gold coins. Now there's another bunch of coins that's out here that maybe you hadn't heard about or that you didn't know about. Now, those gold coins are the old gold coins that were minted from about 1794 until about 1933. That's the gold. And then we had silver coins from about 1794 until approximately 1964. All of those coins are still out there. They're not in general circulation, but they're in the hands of all of us people. For instance, if you would think about it, you probably have some numismatic coins. For instance, do you have any old barber quarters? You know, the coins made from 1892 to 1916. Have you got any of those old wheat pennies? Have you got any Indian head pennies? Have you got any silver coins at all? Well, all of those coins, those silver coins, are all real money coins. And, you know, they're out there, and you and I have them, and everybody else out there, and his brother has them. Let me give you a little illustration as to how much this is worth. Just take the Indian head pennies. They were minted from 1859 to 1909, about 51 years. And those 51 years, they minted 1,890,560,000 Indian head pennies. Did you know that? That's a bunch. Now, there's 100 of those to the dollar, so the face value of those copper pennies, now they were about 0.850 copper and 0.150, I believe it was, something on that order. Nickel. They weren't 100% copper, but they were, you know, pretty much copper, and they weighed 5.67 grams as opposed to these new the pennies today. They only weigh 3.5 grams, so they were about twice as heavy, but they were made out of copper and nickel instead of being made out of zinc and aluminum and other crap, you know. Well, anyway, do you know what that copper is worth? Well, the face value of those coins was $18,905,600. And the copper value of those coins is almost the face value, $17,104,996. In other words, today, with copper at $3.50 a pound, the copper value of those pennies is worth the face value of those pennies. Now, it's true, those pennies, when you go into the coin store, the coin dealer, and you want to buy one, they want a couple of dollars for a penny. They've got a numismatic value, a collector's value. But I'm just telling you that if you just melted that copper down, you've got the full value of the face value. And listen, those 1,890,000,000 Indian head pennies, they're out there in your top drawer just like they're in my top drawer. We all have them. But those coins, after they've been circulated for about 30 years, people see that they're old. They're 30, 40, 50 years old. And so they start saving them. They don't spend them anymore. They don't use them for money. They use them for savings. And you've got a bunch of coins, or you've got some little jars and baskets that are just full of coins. I was looking in the numismatic handbook. In fact, I'll just pick it up right here. It's on my desk. And I'll look at Indian head, not Indian head, but Lincoln pennies here. Listen to this. In a recent year here, we're looking at 2008. In 2008, the Lincoln penny. The Denver Mint produced 2.849 billion of them. That's 2.5 billion. And the Philadelphia Mint, they produced 2.5 billion. That's 5 billion of those coins. 5 billion of those phony baloney coins. Now, you take a look the next time you get some pennies, just to start looking for the old wheat pennies. They're Lincoln pennies minted from 1909 to 1958, and they've got 2 ears of wheat on the back of them. See, you won't find those in circulation anymore. But billions and billions of those were produced in that 50-year period, and you and I and everybody else in America has all of them. You know, save for a few that were lost on the Titanic and, you know, a few that were lost here and there or burned up or, you know, people lost them in the dirt. By and large, all those pennies are out there. And you know those 5 billion pennies that were minted in 2008? Well, go out here 30, 40, 50 years, and all those pennies will be out of circulation because people will pick them up. So here's my point. All the money that's ever been coined in the United States, it's still here. And we still have it. Or somebody still has it. I mean, you may be sitting there saying, well, I don't have any. Well, okay, maybe you don't have any, but I've got my share. And then I know the coin dealers and the coin stores, they have their share. And I remember my Aunt Bessie and my granny. My granny had a gold dollar from 1851, and she had a 1922 Lincoln penny, D penny, which was pretty valuable. And you see, all of us have all of this money. That we're not short of money. That's my point. We've got real money out here for you and I to buy, sell, and trade with. Now, if we choose not to, and if we choose to use these clad coins and paper dollars and the rest of it, that's a choice for us to make. But, you know, we could change, and we could start dealing with our neighbors and friends and business associates in gold money. And now that I've been doing it for about 25 years, I can tell you I have a lot of business associates that take gold and silver coin and business associates that pay me in gold and silver coin. And if I can do it, and I'm a plumber, you can do it. It isn't impossible at all. Hey, it's halfway time here, and I've got to remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, that doesn't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing and recommending will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the law school at 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. Hey, we're talking about Indian head pennies here and clad coins and one thing and another. Let me give you a little illustration as to how valuable this gold and silver is. The filing minimum here in the United States this past year was $10,800. Well, $10,800 isn't very much money in Federal Reserve notes. In fact, the poverty line in this country is $20,000. That's when you're living right at the edge of poverty. The median wage in this country, that is half the people earn more and half the people earn under $50,000 a year, is about where it's at. It isn't that our gold and silver is getting to be more valuable. It's that our paper money is becoming less and less valuable. It's just that. It's fiat paper money. And a dollar bill costs 3 cents to print, and a $100 bill costs 3 cents to print. So the government and the banks, they can take a piece of paper, put some ink on it. It's good paper, though, and it's linen paper. And for 3 cents, they can print $100, take it out into the marketplace and buy, well, at $2.50 a gallon, they can buy 25 gallons of gas, can't they? Well, okay, that's good for them, but you and I can't do that. And you and I need to deal in just weights and balances. That's what God charged us with doing. Now, if we did that, would that be advantageous to us? Well, let me give you a little illustration. Back in 1923, Joe and May Heard bought a 40-acre piece of ground here next to me, and they paid $3,000 for that. $3,000 for 40 acres. And how much is that? Let's take 3,000 and divide that by 40. They paid $75 an acre for that ground over there. But they paid for it in $20 double eagles. They paid for it in gold coin. So $3,000 divided by 20 was 150 $20 gold pieces. 150 $20 gold pieces. Well, today, those $20 double eagle gold pieces, they're still worth $20. And why is that? Well, because Congress said so. And if you can't believe Congress, who can you believe? I know it may sound kind of crazy to you, but a $20 double eagle doesn't have any greater or lesser value than a $20 bill. A $50 eagle, that's the new gold coin, has a $50 value. It's printed right on the coin, just like a quarter says one quarter dollar or 25 cents, 50 cents, 10 cents, one penny. Do you remember that? I cited it to you. It's in Title 31. I'm not writing this now. This is the Congress of the United States. They're the ones that write our laws. And this United States money is expressed in dollars, dimes, or tenths, cents, or hundreds, and mills, or thousands. That's 5101. And then in 5103, United States coins and currency, including Federal Reserve notes and circulating notes of Federal Reserve banks and national banks, are legal tender for all debts, public charges, taxes, and dues. But foreign gold or silver coins are not. So what happens is this. If you were to come to me and pay me $50 in U.S. gold coin, that's what you paid me, $50. But if you gave me a $50 Canadian maple leaf, that's called fair market value. And what they're going to do, the IRS would say, well, that Canadian maple leaf is not legal tender. That's a commodity, and you received that commodity, so therefore it's worth $1,300. That's called fair market value. But if I received a $20 double eagle dated 1898, let's say, that's a numismatic coin. And all of these coins, Congress has declared to be numismatic, both the old and the new. Isn't that special? Now, here's what that boils down to. Noel Everett Chisholm up here one day, he said, I'd sell you this 40 acres up here if you'd pay me $50,000. And I said, Everett, my God, that's a lot of money, $50,000. And at the time, I think gold was around $600 an ounce, you know, measured in Fed note dollars. And I said to him, I said, now, you want $50,000. If you divided that by 600, that'd be about 83 and a third ounces of gold. If we multiplied that times 20, that would be $1,666. And I said, Everett, would you take $1,666.66 in U.S. gold coin? He said he would. Now, May Heard and Joe bought the place for, get this, they bought the place for $3,000 back in 1923, and I bought it for $1,666.66. Now, actually, I didn't pay him with 20s. I paid him $6,300 in U.S. gold coin, but I paid him in 50s, paid him in the new coins. And as a result of that, can you see the advantage that I would have? And can you see the advantage that I might have if they were to raise my taxes over here? Now, I remember when Everett bought the place, he paid $26,000 for it at auction from the heirs when old May Heard died back about 1990. And he went in there and he bought the place. and he paid Federal Reserve notes, $26,000. He sold it for $50,000, made a $24,000 profit. But if he bought it for $26,000 and he sold it to me for $6,000, didn't he have a $20,000 loss? In this case, $18,000 loss. Think about that, because that's the way that works. Now, isn't that just real special? So when I tell you that when God designed gold and silver coin, and when he gave us our gold and silver coin back in 1986, they didn't do that for no good purpose. Now, gold and silver are property, and there's a little something to be said for this property over here, because there's a little story that goes along with this, if I can find it here. And then it deals with this thing of dollars and cents. I don't know if I can find it. I don't have it right here in front of me. But the moral to the story is this. Congress, under our Constitution, has the power, has the duty to set the value of our coin. So years ago, they set it at $20. And then in the 1930s, they raised it from $20 to $35. Today, the official value of an ounce of gold in the United States is $42.22. Now, when you go out into the marketplace to buy that gold, you got to pay $1,300 for it, you know, using Federal Reserve note dollars. The bankers wanted us to use Federal Reserve note inflated dollars because they create those dollars and they charge interest on them. They don't want us using gold and silver. They don't want us using just weights and balances. They can't make any money off of that. They make their money off of printing their own dollars. That's their franchise, and then charging interest for it. So far, they've just made a killing. I mean, they're just making money hand over fist. Mainly because most Americans don't know what else to use, don't know what else to do. Well, here at the law school in our business class, we take a look in the Bible, which is the foundation of law, starting with Moses at Mount Sinai. Our federal constitution, our founding fathers relied upon the Bible when they wrote our constitution. They put in 22 principles of law from the Ten Commandments. Now, as a result of that, Anglo-Saxon administration is just replete with statutes, judgments, and commandments that come from the Bible, including things like just weights and balances. Just weights and balances. Now, as a result of that, you know, we Americans have our just weights and balances back, codified by our Congress and by our Constitution, so that instead of making $100,000 a year, well, what if you just made $10,000 a year? Think about this now. If you make $100,000 a year, you'll be in the top 5% of income earners, and you'll have to pay an income tax of about 42%, which would be about $42,000 is what you'd be paying, you know, in round numbers, on the income at $100,000 a year, making paper, you know, paper money. Now, what would happen if you made $10,000 and you got paid in gold coin? Just for the sake of our discussion, assume that you got paid in gold coin, how much then would you be paying? Or how much tax would you owe? Well, let's see how much this would be. $100,000 divided by $1,300 an ounce would be 76.92 ounces. Let's call it 77. Well, 77 times $50 face value is only $3,850. Now, the tax consequence comes in when you take it into the gold dealer. Remember, these are numismatic coins. Numismatic means they're collector coins. It means you take this coin in and you put it on the counter, and it's a $50 gold coin, and the guy gives you $1,300. You got a $1,250 capital gain. Now you got to pay a capital gain tax on that numismatic coin. Well, what if all of us just went out and bought, sold, and traded in our gold coins? What if we just took all of our Indian head pennies and our old nickels and dimes and quarters and half dollars and our gold coins out here that we've got, and we just went out and started buying, selling, and trading with our business associates with those? Forget about bank accounts and credit cards. And forget about making, you know, $20 an hour, and then just concentrate on making gold coins. All of a sudden, we'd be under the filing minimum and we'd be out of the game, wouldn't we? Mull that one over for a day or two and chomp that one around and see what you think of that. And it seems like a pretty good idea to me, and it seems like that when God gave us gold and silver coin and told us to use it, seems like he gave us a pretty good idea there. You know, just all things, you know, all things being equal. Don't you think? Now, there's a guy that wrote a paper here. His name is Franklin Sanders, and you could probably get a copy of it. It deals with numismatic coins. It's called What is a Numismatic Coin and Why You Shouldn't Buy Them. You can probably get a copy of this from Franklin Sanders get on online, Google him out, and you'll find the following article first appeared in the July 1996 Money Changer, and I'm republishing it now because over and over coin dealers keep repeating their same false claims, which this article disproves. And these include false claims like numismatic coins are exempt from government seizure by law. That's totally false. There's no basis in statute or regulation for that. Or that customer purchases of bullion gold coins must be reported to the government, but numismatic coins don't have to be reported. That's totally false. No report is required when you buy gold, regardless as to whether it's bullion or numismatic. Only sales of certain gold and silver items must be reported, and then only when they exceed certain amounts. Number three, coins minted before 1934 are exempt from government seizure. That's totally false. There's no basis in regulation or statute to support that. Number four, United States $20 gold pieces minted before 1934 are exempt from government gold seizure. That's totally false. There's no basis in statute or regulation to support that. In fact, it was mainly these coins which the government did seize back in 1933. And then number five, the law defines numismatic coins as those having a premium of 15% or more over their gold content. That's false. Totally false. There's no basis in regulation or statute. And a regulation was proposed back in 1984, but it was never adopted. And then number six, the law defines United States $20 gold pieces as numismatic coins. That's totally false. There's no basis in statute or regulation. Now, the people that are selling these numismatic coins, and they charge you an arm and a leg for them. And as a result of that, they make a lot of money off of that. In fact, the premium on them is about 25%. And then again, you know, I don't blame these guys for selling a coin and making a profit off of it, but if you could buy that coin for 4%, wouldn't you rather pay 4% than 25%? And that's where the bullion coins come in, and that's where these new coins, these new $50 Eagles come in. And in fact, there's a market out there for the $20, $10, $5, $2.50, and $1 gold pieces, totally separate and aside from numismatics. But again, that's another story for another day. But let me point out to you this article written by Franklin Sanders. Google him out. He's in West Point, Tennessee. I don't have his name and number here right in front of me. I recommend him and his newsletter quite often here on the air. Last thing he said here on the last page, he said, cash reporting quirk. A broker reporting is a hog of a different color. Cash reporting requires certain entities to report receiving cash in amounts greater than $10,000 or $3,000 in some circumstances. For this purpose, the government isn't interested whether you're buying precious metals or manure, and only that you plunked down cash. The cash reporting requirements of 26 USC 6050-1 supposedly have companion regulations at 26 CFR Part 1, but note that the word cash has a special definition in this law. In a December 30, 1993 letter, the IRS Assistant Chief Counsel for Income Tax and Accounting, Vincent Cardella, wrote to the Industry Council for Tangible Assets as follows. He said, Section 1-60501-1C1 of the Treasury Regulations defines the term cash in part to include the coin and currency of the United States or of any other country which circulate in and are customarily used and accepted as money in the country in which it's issued. The term cash does not include bullion coins such as gold bullion coins issued under the Gold Bullion Act of 1985, nor does it include commemorative coins such as coins issued under the Statue of Liberty Ellis Island Commemorative Coin Act 99 Statute 113. Buy gold and silver American Eagles, but gold and silver American Eagles are legal tender. Now, as crazy as this sounds, this means that you could walk into a Mercedes dealership, plunk down 201 American Gold Eagle coins with a face value of $10,050 and a paper money value of $80,400, and it wouldn't be a reportable transaction. Hey, what do you think of that? Now, it certainly appears that there is a hole in the cash transaction reporting laws big enough to drive a 747 jumbo jet through. Now, the simple way to avoid, not evade now, but avoid cash reporting is to use American Gold Eagle coins and silver American Eagles in everyday transactions. Crazier still, since customs is a part of Treasury, do you suppose that American Eagle gold coins are exempt from reporting as cash when you leave the country? Now, you know, you say, well, that sounds crazy. But, you know, that's the government. It's the government shooting themselves in the foot. They hate gold and silver because they want to discourage the ordinary people from using it. They write it out of their regulations, but only succeeding in making gold and silver more private than their phony paper money, which is exactly where you and I want to be, isn't it? Private. And I think this is a very valuable article. Again, it's The Money Changer, and I think you can get them online. Just go Google out The Money Changer, West Point, Tennessee, Franklin Sanders. It was first written in July of 1996, and it's called What's a Numismatic Coin and Why You Should Not Buy Them. And then there's more to the article, this thing of buying numismatic coins. is much more expensive than buying the bullion coins. All right, now remember we started off, we're talking about 5103, and this is Title 31, Section 5103. Go to your local law library, or go, better yet, you can just go do this online. Go to Find Law online, look up the United States Code, Title 31, Section 5101 through 5112, and have it printed out, and then sit down and read it. It's written in plain English, and I think you can read it just as well as I can. You don't need me to sit here and explain it to you. At least I don't think you do. I think you can probably figure this out for yourself. I just wanted to bring it to your attention so that you can see that there is an option. There's another side to this story. We're not locked into the banks. We may be their slaves and bond servants today, but we don't have to stay that way. We may have been lied to and deceived, and maybe they've got the mortgage on my house, and maybe they foreclosed, and I'm unemployed, and blah, 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 but you don't have to stay that way. That's the point I'm making. There's a choice to be made, and if you want to make the choice, then get after it, and let's start making some changes. You elected Barack Obama because you wanted change and found out didn't come. This is what real change is all about. Let's go back to practicing the Ten Commandments. I know it's kind of a wild new scheme, but the Ten Commandments has a better monetary system than does the United States Code or the fiat paper currencies of the country that you're living in. Now, in the next program, I'm going to take you through the 17 economic laws of the Bible. There are 33 benefits that we receive by practicing these laws of the Scripture. And 17 of these laws of the Scripture deal with economics. They deal with money. It just deals with usury and interest and buying and selling, trading, and trying to make a little money on the side. And I think those 17 economic laws have a hell of a lot more to offer than does the United States, the IRS, or the economic system of the bankers and fiat paper money. Yeah, I'm out of time here again, kids, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.